plus vous habitez dans une région qui a beaucoup de chirurgiens cardiaques et d'hôpitaux qui offrent la chirurgie, plus la population dont vous faites partie va se faire opérer. Là, les gens se disent « Wow, c'est fou! » Mais peut-être que c'est parce que, comme ça, au moins, on sauve des vies. Ah, ah. Les gens ne meurent pas moins de maladies cardiaques. En fait, ils meurent un peu plus. Mais ça, faut pas le dire.
Good evening. It's 6 o'clock. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio, from drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between. Professional, student, and community productions in and around Montreal, the land also known as Jojage, as well as Mooneyang, where we spell theater with an R-E at the end. I'm your host, Sarah De A, recording from home on Thursday, June 23rd, 2022. On tonight's show, my guests. Director Audrianne Bouchard relaunches her multisensory play Camille, an accessible creation for the sighted, the blind, and the partially sighted.
What story are we telling through these scenes? And it became clear because we were asking the audience to either open themselves to other senses, to wear a blindfold for those who aren't blind, that trust and relationship was at the center of the story.
The Dora Wasserman Yiddish Theater returns with its first full-length musical in over 2 years, The Sages of Chelm. I speak with two performers, Jody Lachman and her son, Bram Lachman-Mankoff.
The play is called The Sages of Chelm, but it's really a town of fools. An asifa, which is an official gathering of the townsfolk, where he's asked 3 questions and he has to answer them properly or else he can't stay in Chelm.
They've shown time and time again they're not the smartest people, but as people who have seen the play will know, it makes for some great entertainment when people think they're really smart but they're really not. They end up doing a lot of stupid things, and it's a great thing to be a part of.
And Norman Navratsky brings back his free streaming show about the detention of Ukrainian Canadians. This time, it's for a good cause.
And last week, for the first time, they asked, can you please send money to help us feed people on the front lines, to help us feed refugees coming into our small town, to help us organize programs, take care of refugee kids.
Before we begin, it is officially summer, June 23rd. We marked Indigenous Peoples Day on Tuesday, and we're full into the festival season here in Montreal. A hearty congrats and a big thank you to the artists, volunteers, and organizing team at the Saint-Ambroise Montreal Fringe Festival. The fest is back in full force for the first time this year, coming to a close after 10 thrilling days. I managed to squeeze in 18 shows. My favorites included Josephine, a cabaret about the life of Josephine Baker. Hopefully it'll be back in Montreal before we know it. As well as Is This Yours?, a one-man show about connection and lost items by Al LaFrance, formerly from Montreal. Both of those shows were honored at the closing awards ceremony, The Frankies. And there was as well the eccentric and mystical Tiny Stories and Strange Prayers. I spoke with the creator, Naomi Moon, last week. So that's just to name a few shows. There were so many more that I didn't get to see. One big highlight was meeting Nick and Chris Mora, the original founders of the Montreal Festival. They flew in from Edmonton, where they live now, to see some shows and enjoy themselves. They said that while the city has, of course, changed, the vibe and the feel of the Fringe is still very much the same. So a big cheers to the Fringe and Mainline Theater. And if you want to relive some of the magic, you can check out Le Fringe Buzz Lab, a podcast series co-hosted by myself and Véronique Raymond, in which we speak with Fringe artists and organizers. Fringe Buzz Lab is on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify. Now on with the show. A few weeks ago here on Upstage, we met a tap dancer who put on a show that allowed people with hearing impairments to feel the taps of his shoes through vests that would repeat the thrumming and the beats from his movements. As well, of course, there were interpreters who were communicating all of his stories and his explanations through American Sign Language. I have a similar show to share with you tonight that focuses in on accessibility. I first met Audrey-Anne Bouchard at the MAI in September 2019, less than 2 years ago, but it feels so much longer than that. She was preparing to present her new show, Camille, Un Rendez-vous au-delà du visuel, and it was a smash sellout. Audrey-Anne is an interdisciplinary artist. She lives with a visual impairment caused by Stargardt's disease. And back in 2016, Audrey-Anne founded a research group called Au-delà du visuel to look at different ways to share dance and theater with people living with blindness and low vision. She is recognized not only for her art, but her advocacy and expertise in accessibility. But back to Audrey-Anne's show Camille, a tale about an abrupt end to a friendship, quite a puzzle. And you are literally the person who has been left behind. Audience members, just six of them at a time, experience this immersive story through their different senses. If you have your sight or are partially sighted, your eyes are covered with a blindfold. Sound, smell, touch are used to replicate the story. It can include the sound of scissors to showcase a haircut, the wafting odor of coffee to show that you're in a cafe, a soft touch to signify that you've met someone. Here is a snippet of what the show sounds like.
I danced with no idea who, with people I didn't know, who didn't talk. It felt good. I catch my breath, rest my head in my hands. I wonder if you ever think of me. You're not here. But I feel like you are.
Camille, the story.
I was entranced to experience Camille back in 2019 when it first premiered at the MAI in French, and now it's getting its English debut at the Siegel Center. The translation was commissioned by Playwrights Workshop Montreal and done under the supervision of Emma Tibaldo. I spoke with director Audrey-Anne Bouchard yesterday. Welcome once again to Upstage, Audrey-Anne. Great to have you here.
Hello, Sarah. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
You must be so excited to see this show getting a new chapter and a new language this month. How does that feel?
It feels great. It also feels like an accomplishment that of months, you know, with the pandemic, we've been postponing and it's finally happening. And it's very nice to be able to dive again in this experience that is the Camille, the story.
Your work on accessibility in theater is legendary in Montreal and elsewhere. You come at it from a very personal angle. You have something called Stargardt's disease. So can you tell me what going to theater is like for you as an audience member?
That's a very interesting question. So my visual impairment affects my central vision. So Stargardt's disease, it means that I don't have central vision, I only see with my peripheral vision. So when I attend the theater, usually I'm always missing a part of the image that I'm looking at. And the closer that I can sit from the stage, the easier it is, because then I miss less information. If I'm sitting really far, I might not be able to see some actors who look really small, you know, with the distance. So there's always a bit of a challenge, but I like to go with a friend or a family member who can describe for me what's going on as well.
Are theaters doing enough to make theater accessible for people with visual impairment, like in general?
No.
Yeah.
I mean, there's two different approaches. I mean, I guess there's a lot more, but there's artists on one side who try to create more and more work now that is more inclusive. And this means that the work itself is designed to be accessible in different ways. So for example, we'll have the audience sitting in the action. Like for Cami, the story, we have the audience sitting on stage. There's other artists who integrate, for example, interpreters for people from the deaf community as part of the cast, you know? So there's an artistic research that's being done. And then there's the venues who can try and accommodate people by providing audio description or by offering seats that are closer to the stage for people who can't see that well. Or so there's all these kinds of possibilities, and I would say it's starting to become more of a need, not a need, but I would say an imperative that people are starting to realize, okay, we need to make things more accessible for everyone.
Adrienne, do you feel that you yourself are someone kind of beating the drum for this kind of accessibility and these kind of moves to make it easier for people with impairments?
I hope so. I hope that I can help. I hope that I can inspire people and contribute to the discussion and the dialogue. Yes.
I took in Camille myself a couple of years back when you did it at the Mai, and I loved it so much. It was such a cool, fun experience. I love like immersive experiences and sensory things. Like I love getting a massage, for example. I don't mind going to the dentist. Those experiences felt analogous to what I went through in Camille in terms of having attention and to be sensing things with my body and with my what thought I was hearing. Does that kind of ring true? Like, have people told you similar things?
Yes, absolutely. People liked being more included and all their senses being stimulated and not just looking from afar at the action, but being a part of it. That was the beauty of the first version of the show that we created in 2019.
So why don't we tell the story of Camille, or Camille colon the story. It's about a friendship coming to an end, something everybody goes through. Tell me about how the plot developed.
Yes. So it's important to say, I think, that the story was the last thread that was... Camille is a collective creation, and we created the piece by developing different tableaus, different scenes involving multi-sensory explorations and movement. And then we felt, okay, what is it that all these scenes are telling? What story are we telling through these scenes? And it became clear because we were asking the audience to either open themselves to other senses, to wear a blindfold for those who aren't blind, that trust and relationship was at the center of the story. And so we became able to focus on, okay, we're going to talk about the loss of a friendship and how hard it is for the character who's losing his childhood friend to create ties with new people and to trust new people in new situations.
That is the voice of Adrienne Bouchard, who is the director of Camille, the story, on now at the Siegel Center. Can you describe to me one of the experiences someone's going to go through as an audience member, where their eyes are closed, or you know they have a visual impairment and they can't see anyways, or they're only seeing partially? What is how do you like convey like the full kind of sensual experience of one part of the play?
Yes. So basically, we guide the audience onto the stage and they're invited to sit on a chair. So this version that we redesigned to respect COVID-19 measures is a bit less active than the first version. You will be welcomed by myself at the beginning of the show. If you are blind, you won't need to wear a blindfold, of course. If you are partially sighted or sighted, we first ask you to wear a blindfold. And then we take you on the stage where you walk into the set. and you sit on a chair that was designed for this experience. So there's some surprises coming out of the chair as well. And you're going to start hearing voices, hearing, feeling textures, smelling different odors. So all your senses are going to be stimulated, and the experience is an hour long, and the story is being told throughout with all these different forms of multi-sensory stimulation.
You must have had so much fun getting to design these experiences, because it's very creative.
Absolutely, and it really requires designers and performers to explore their art form in a different way. For example, our set designer, Laurence Gagnon-Lefebvre, who worked on this version with Diana Uribe, she was telling me, I never thought that as a set designer, I would be cooking food on stage, trying to find out what smells good, what could smell for a long time. And, you know, so what food makes a funny noise when it cooks, what's interesting. So it's all brought us to be very creative in other ways.
There's also a lot of care taken into how the audience members are brought into the piece and how they're moved around, because of course, if you are fully sighted, you're wearing the blindfold. As you said, if you're wearing the blindfold, if you are partially or missing your sight, you're not going to see anything. So you're really relying on the cast members to take care of you. And you put a lot of attention into this. Can you tell me about Lauriane and Marie-Jo Fouché and the training they have in order to make that seamless?
Absolutely. So Lauriane and Marie-Jo are both choreographers for the show, and they've also trained as massage therapists. So we've taken a lot of time with them to develop, you know, the quality of the presence that we have on stage, but also to be able to listen to the body language of the audience members and see, are they comfortable? What is it that they need? How can we introduce contact with them physically to guide them without it being intrusive, but with remaining respectful, but also very clear, so that the spectator does not wonder throughout the experience, should I be doing this? Should I be doing that? So how do we convey some gestures that are clear? And everyone in the team, including all the performers, have also trained in guiding techniques for people who are blind. So that's also part of the training that we have for this, to make sure people are safe.
Adrienne, what is more complicated to work on? Is it thinking about how do I make someone smell something or hear something in a different way? Or is it really like the care and the attention that goes into making sure people are secure and comfortable?
Yes. So when we started to work on this piece 4 years ago, I think that it was very natural for us to put attention to movement, guidance, gestures, and ensuring that people were safe. And actually, from the very beginning of our process, it became clear that this was going to be a caring environment and a caring experience. So that came more naturally to us, I would say. And then developing all the other senses was a bit of a challenge. I would say that for this new version, we had the time and the opportunity to dive more into smells, which we didn't quite tackle in the first version in 2019, because we realized how complex it is to actually have us choose the right smell to tell the right story, but also how do you get rid of it when you don't want it anymore? When does it appear? So these are all technicalities that we had to kind of work on more than we thought.
Right. Because I wonder sometimes I cook a meal, I take a nap, and then I walk it back into the restaurant apartment and I go, how does the apartment still smell like the food I was cooking?
It's exactly that.
I do remember, though, the smell of coffee. There was a scene in a cafe in the first production, and the smell of coffee was a very powerful but lingering odor from like very early on in the show. And that was really, really cool. I do also want to reference the fact that this is a translation. It will be done in English for the first time. And it was overseen, it was commissioned actually by Playwrights Workshop Montreal. Can you tell me about the translation process? Was it any more difficult, or was it just like a normal translation from French to English?
It's hard for me to say because it was my first, Camille is actually the first play that I wrote with Marc-André Lapointe. So this was our first experience of having our text being translated, and it was much more complex than I thought it was going to be, like to find the right vocabulary, the right language to replace the words in French, but also to keep the poetry of the rhythm and the musicality. And I think that Alexis Diamond, the translator, did a wonderful job.
One thing to also note is that it's only an hour, so it's really quick, relatively speaking, but people might be kind of nervous about being touched or moved around. And, you know, we're still coming out of our kind of weird COVID cave. All the other precautions being taken in terms of COVID and other sanitary considerations.
Yes. So basically in this version, there's much less contact between the audience and performers. The 2019 version, Camille, Rendez-vous de l'Art Visuel, was all based on physical interactions. And it was hard for us to let go of that and say, okay, let's adapt and create something that's going to be COVID safe, I would say. But I think that it allowed us to explore, like I said, other sensory experiences. And in this version, all the audience is distanced throughout the experience. So there's 2 meters between each audience member. And then we respect also distanciation. The performers on stage respect that the distance. Everyone is wearing a mask at all times. So, you know, the fact that you're wearing a blindfold sometimes can make you feel unclear. Are people far away from me? Or, you know, so here we keep the distance. We wear a mask and we disinfect all the objects that people come in contact with during the show.
It sounds like the kind of challenge that forced you to be more creative and to really push yourself in a different way, like the good kind of challenge.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Adrienne, it sounds like you have someone there with you.
Yes, it's my dog. Oh. I'm so sorry.
Not at all. Not at all. I'll let you go because it's so that you can go attend to him or her. It's been such a pleasure to speak with you again. I really salute the work that you're doing. And I think this is so wonderful. And I can only hope to see more work like Camille hitting our stages because I just think they're so wonderful. Like no matter where you are in your life, I think this is a fabulous experience. Thank you so much, Adrienne, and congratulations.
Well, thank you for following all the different versions of this and still having interest for my work. It means a lot to me.
That was Adrienne Bouchard, the director and creator of Camille, the story. It is being presented in English for the first time at the Siegel Center until July 3rd. Get your tickets ASAP. There are only 6 audience members at a time with 2 performances each night, about an hour in length. You can visit thesiegelcenter.org or call 514-739-7944 for more information about Camille and to get your tickets. And you can also visit the project at English-au-delà-du-visuel.com. And that's visuel with an E-L at the end, not an A-L. I'm Sarah DeA. You are listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week. Still to come, I touch base with artist Norman Navratsky, who is remounting his solo show inspired by the cruel detention of Ukrainian Canadians over a century ago, with hopes of helping people who are in need today. When I was growing up, my mom would read to me stories about the fools of Chelm, a shtetl or a small town full of, well, idiots. But idiots who thought they were the smartest, most knowledgeable people around. The denizens of Chelm make up a big part of the Eastern European Jewish folklore, making it a prime candidate for what else? A Yiddish musical. Abraham Shulman's story, The Sages of Chelm, paired with Eli Rubinstein's music, first debuted back in 1970, a tale of star-crossed lovers and mistaken identities. It's a fun return to form for Montreal's Dora Wasserman Yiddish Theatre, back on stage after 2 years of The Plague. Directed by up-and-coming musical maven Trevor Barrett, this whimsical and colorful production is done in Yiddish with English and French supertitles, with a cast ranging in age from teens to the late 70s. And there's a lot of continuity here as well, because the show's been done before. One member of the cast, Stan Unger, played the love interest Menachem back in the 1980s and 90s, and here he plays the rabbi. Musical director Nick Burgess, so he's in the band, he once performed himself as Menachem, and the family is a theme too. Rabbi Rachel Feingold is on stage with her daughter Kinneret. And co-president of the Dora Wasserman Yiddish Theater, Jody Lachman, is on stage as Yenta Peshe with her son, Bram Lachman Mankoff. Jody and Bram took a break from their hectic schedule to fill me in on Sages of Chelm yesterday. Welcome, Jody and Bram, to Upstage. Thank you so much for being here.
It's our pleasure. Thank you so much for having us.
It's your first big moment returning, kind of pre-post. I guess we're still in the pandemic, but it's the first big show back for Dora Wasserman Yiddish Theater. How does it feel?
It feels so, so wonderful. During the pandemic, we did some Hanukkah sing-alongs online, and there was a book launching where we did some singing online. But online is not at all the same thing as having people in the theater who react and who laugh and who clap and you can tell you're bringing joy to. So this is just absolutely awesome. And it's been so long coming.
I've seen you perform on stage before, Jody, and you put so much energy into it, like 110%. You must just really love performing.
I do. I absolutely adore it. And in this play, I get to play the character of Yenta Peshe, who is this woman who comes running on the stage at the end of the show because her house is on fire. And so there's a lot of screaming and there's a lot of jumping up and down. And I go through over and over the inventory of what's burning in my house. And so it becomes my mantra in a kind of way. And I think there are 5 different times that I go through the whole inventory of what's burning down. And each time I try to bring more energy and a different way of saying it. And I'm screaming at everybody. It's just awesome. And I have the best time.
So that is a Jody Lachman playing the role of Yenta Peshe. And Bram, we haven't forgotten you. You're playing the role of Hirsch, the hunter.
Yes, that is correct. It's not as interesting as my mom's part, obviously. I have about 4 or 5 lines. But still, you know, got to make the most of it. There's a bunch of things I do as just like a background character. You know, you got to keep your eye out. But I'm there as well.
The story is the Sages of Chelm. I think the Yiddish theater has done it previously, so it's kind of like a favorite story that we're returning to for this production. Is that right?
It's 1958.
Wow. Okay. That's amazing. A lot of the stories we tell are decades old, like over a century old. I understand that this musical has actually only been performed since 1970 in particular. Can one of you walk me through the story itself? Who do we meet here?
Sure. So the musical starts with a rooster crowing, which is me backstage. And then
naturally,
Chelmers come on stage and it's a beautiful morning and we're greeting each other. And then this stranger comes to Chelm and his name is Menachem. And we're afraid of strangers, the people of Chelm. And so anyways, he asks who we are and we sing a song about Chelm and we do a dance. And then he notices this beautiful girl, Shoshana, who lives in Chelm. And he plays a recorder and she thinks it's beautiful. And anyway, so he decides he wants to stay in Chelm, but the Chelmers don't really like that because they're afraid that he's going to get married and have children and turn Chelm foolish because he's not from Chelm, because the play is called the Sages of Chelm, but it's really a town of fools. An asifa, which is an official gathering of the townsfolk, where he's asked 3 questions and he has to answer them properly or else he can't stay in Chelm. And Shoshana is dressed up as her father and feeding him the answers, but the 3rd answer he doesn't understand. So he gets 2 out of 3 right. He's allowed to stay, but he's never allowed to get married. And so eventually he does something that the Chelamers consider smart. And I probably should have said spoiler alert at the beginning of this. And he's allowed to stay. And there are weddings at the end of the show. And there's me running that my house is on fire and nobody's really helping me. And it was just a normal day in Chelam. It all takes place over the course of one day. So we have a sun in the background and a moon that comes up and then the sun comes up again. It's just, that's basically the story.
That is the voice of Jody Lachman, who is playing Yenta Peshe in The Sages of Chelam on Now at the Siegel Center, presented by the Dora Wasserman Yiddish Theater. And joining us as well on the call is Bram Lachman-Minkoff, her son, who's playing the role of Hirsch the Hunter. And I love that you brought up Chelam and the idea of a town full of people that, who think that they're super, super smart, but actually they're very, very dumb. And I just feel like that concept is, it's an old one. Like these stories have been told for such a long time, but it feels fresher than ever to have a group of people that really know what they're doing, but they don't, because who really knows at all what they're doing at any point?
No, nobody does. We really don't. And interestingly, there's this character, the Litvak, who comes twice to Chelam, and he wants there to be a train that will run through Chelam for purposes of progress. And we're terrified of him. He comes in with an iPad and it beeps at a certain point. We all scream because anything modern scares us. And the second time that he comes, Menachem does his smart thing, which is to tell the Litvak that we don't need to go faster. And we just want to live our quiet lives in peace without the stress of technocratia and mechanizatia, all of the modern concepts. And that's the smart thing that Menachem does that allows him to stay in Chelam finally. And I think it's a very, very timely idea. You know, when you hear now about retreats where people aren't allowed to look at their phones for 5 days and they come back to who they really are and living in a real way. And so yes, the Chelamers aren't the smartest people in the world, but we know how to live. It's a happy place. I think people in the audience want to live in Chelam.
Yeah. Bram, what do you think about the concept of the city of fools who think they're super smart?
I mean, obviously, they've shown time and time again they're not the smartest people. But as people who have seen the play will know, it makes for some great entertainment when people think they're really smart, but they're really not. They end up doing a lot of stupid things, and it's a great thing to be a part of.
Jody was talking about some of her favorite moments, listing all the items that she lost in the fire, opening the show as a rooster. Bram, I'm wondering for you as Hirsch the Hunter, what moment stands out for you? What do you really look forward to, or what song do you like singing?
Well, I don't want to give away too much, but there's this moment where the main character needs to be tied to a tree so that they know where he is so he doesn't escape. And at some point, he escapes. And then these two characters, they go looking for him and they ask all these people, like, where is he? The tree is there, the rope is there, but he's not there. And then while they're doing this, the main character sneaks back into the tree. Oh, there he is. See, we did it. He's there. I always like that part.
It's that Yiddish sense of humor that is so funny. That I just love so much. That is the voice of Bram Lachman-Minkoff playing the role of Hirsch the Hunter. The Dora Wasserman Yiddish Theater is presenting The Sages of Chelam right now at the Siegel Center. So the whole show is in Yiddish and there's English and French subtitles. So literally anybody can go see the show and follow along. Are you both proficient in Yiddish? Or
Not even a little bit.
Not even a little bit? Okay. Jody, how about for you?
My Yiddish is pretty good. I went to Bialik High School back in the day when they actually taught Yiddish. So I learned it there. And I've been in enough Yiddish theater productions that I've picked up a great deal of it. And so I can make my way in Yiddish. And our scripts now are written in Yiddish, but it's phonetic English. Yep. Written out, and the English is right underneath the Yiddish. So there's no, anybody who's acting in this show knows exactly what they're saying all the time.
Bram, is it intimidating to perform a musical in another language?
Not as much as I thought it would be. It's not that difficult, especially it would be difficult if it was the Yiddish alphabet, like written in the Yiddish language. That would be significantly more difficult. But, you know, learning the songs and learning the lines, it's all in English. It's just written with the Yiddish sounds. So it's a lot easier to pick up that way.
Right, because when you're reading Yiddish, I live in my land and I see some signs and sometimes in some pieces of paper that have Yiddish written on it because of the Hasidim community being so close by. And I try to look at it, see if I can pick out the letters, but it's very challenging because it's not even just, it's a different alphabet completely. Yeah. A lot of the people in the cast don't speak Yiddish either. There's actually dialect coaches. Did you witness any of that action, that coaching on hand?
I think everybody had a little bit of coaching. Even the people who are really proficient at it, it was like mandatory that they had at least a little bit of coaching, just so they're absolutely sure of how to say what they're saying.
Was there ever an instance where you had to be coached on your pronunciation, where you were saying something with like the wrong inflection or with not enough ch in there, maybe?
Yeah, sometimes. It's not the words themselves. It's more like the emphasis on like which word to put the emphasis on.
Right.
Because when you put the emphasis on a certain word, it means something else. And when you put the emphasis on another word or things like that.
So many people who don't have any Jewish heritage are familiar with some Yiddish words like a shlemiel or a yenta. Did you guys learn any words that you didn't know of before that you're going to add to your lexicon now?
Well, I can tell you while Bram is thinking, one of my favorite expressions in the show is chutzpenitze, which Shoshana's father calls her that when she says that Menachem should stay in Chelem. And a chutzpenitze is basically a woman who's full of chutzpah. And I'm sure everybody has heard of chutzpah in French. It's le front tout autour de la tête. And so a chutzpenitze is somebody who's just full of that. I love that expression. It's just so, so beautiful and so full of imagery.
Chutzpenitze?
Chutzpenitze.
Chutzpenitze.
Yeah. Chutzpenitze. Love it. And Bram, was there a word that you liked?
I was thinking of the exact same one. I just wanted to think if there were any other words that I liked, but that's pretty much the only word.
So that's the word that's being heard a lot in the Lachman Menkoff home right now.
Yeah. You, chutzpenitze.
It sounds like you guys are having so much fun. We want people to go see the show. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me. I really appreciate it.
It's our pleasure, and we hope that people will come and will just feel the joy and sing along. The whole show takes 2 hours, and that includes the intermission, and it's just beautiful. You'll leave humming and smiling and laughing.
And of course, we'll keep an eye out for Yenta Peshe and Hirsch the Hunter, as well as the Rooster. Thank you so much, guys.
Awesome. Thanks, Sarah.
Thanks.
That was Jody Lachman and her son, Bram Lachman Menkoff. She plays Yenta Peshe, and he plays Hirsch the Hunter in The Sages of Chelem, a production of the Dora Wasserman Yiddish Theater. There are just a few more shows to check out before Sunday, June 26th. You can visit SiegelCenter.org or call 514-739-7944. I'm Sarah DeAy, and you're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week. Last December, I brought you a conversation with playwright, actor, and musician Norman Navratsky. You're hearing some of his music right now. He created a solo show inspired by a true and terrible chapter of Canadian history, the detention of Ukrainian immigrants in camps across the country, some 9,000 men, women, and children placed in labor camps, living under appalling conditions, doing forced work. By chance, Norman discovered recently that his own family members had also been interned. So he wrote the story of Nestor, an unemployed new arrival who ends up in a camp in Alberta, but he tries his hand at escape like so many others. This play, Run Navratsky Run, was the third part of Norman's trilogy of Ukrainian-Polish-Canadian plays. His sister Vivian also played a role in the show, and it was largely filmed at the Gaston Miron building in Montreal, with footage from Rodin, Quebec, Banff, and Vancouver. Now, about 2 months after I spoke with Norman, Ukraine, the country today, was invaded by Russia, where the war continues to rage, killing and displacing thousands. Norman has decided to remount his show, Run Navratsky Run, Escape from Banff Prison, and you can now stream it for free on his YouTube site. But he's asking for donations to help a group aiding Ukrainian refugees. As you will see, the current conflict brings up difficult questions that arose over 100 years ago back in Canada.
I caught up with Norman Nevrotsky yesterday. Welcome back to Upstage, Norman. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Sarah, for having me. A pleasure to be back.
We last spoke in December. It's now June. It's been 6 months. And back then, we talked about how you might remount the show at some other point. By remount, we mean make it available on the internet again. So why choose to make this available again online now?
Well, the timing is good. I got support from an organization, a foundation, who wanted me to re-release the film again. They thought it was important enough, it should be seen by other people. So it's the Taras Shevchenko Fund and the National Endowment Council that disperses funds for work dealing with this particular subject. And obviously the timing now is because it's the end, 102nd anniversary of the end of national internment camps in Canada from World War I. But it's also like we're 3 months into a war. So that wasn't part of my thinking way back when, nor in terms of the launching date in advance, never occurred to me that we'd be in a war situation.
Yeah, what an incredible couple of months it's been. The war is now officially over the 100-day mark. So much has happened. You still have family and friends back in Ukraine, right? How are they doing?
Well, the first week, a couple of weeks was like hell, you know, trying to stay in touch with them and ask how they're doing and ask, what can I do for you? And they said, pray. I'm not religious, so I can't really pray. But during the 3 months, they never asked for anything else. I organized fundraisers for Ukraine in general, in Montreal and Vancouver, elsewhere, but they never asked specifically for anything else. And last week, for the first time, they asked, can you please send money to help us feed people on the front lines, to help us feed refugees coming into our small town, to help us organize programs, take care of refugee kids. First time in 3 months they're asking for money. So, but otherwise, knock on wood, they're still okay.
I'm glad to hear that. It must be so stressful to be all the way here and to know that people are going through this back home. Or not back home, but back in the place where you have your roots.
Yeah, it's been very, very difficult. And before the war broke out, my sister and I had been planning to go back to Ukraine to tour, to do music shows and see the family and, you know, buy more costumes for our shows. And then the pandemic hit. So we're like, okay, we got to wait, you know, till the pandemic is over. And now this. So I have no idea when I'll be able to return and see people, but have no idea either what's going to be there. Anyway, but so the play is kind of timely in an unfortunate way because of the war going on. And that's why I decided to make this version of it a fundraiser for humanitarian aid.
Yeah, so tell me about who you're raising money for.
The Focal Visco Foundation is a really cool grassroots group. Originally started out as a bunch of alternative musicians organizing festivals like the Swoney Festival in Montreal or shows at the Casa or the Sala. They were these kinds of people, totally cool, on the ground people. And then they had a bed and breakfast. They ran an eco-tourism organization. Then the war started, so they opened up their house to refugees. They said there were 6 people the first night, 12 people the next night, and 30 people the third night. So it just grew. And now they're one of the largest humanitarian aid organizations there on the border between Poland and Ukraine. But they're totally cool people. I mean, they're people that would be on your radio show right now talking with you.
And they're based in Ukraine. They're near the border. They are helping people that are crossing. What kind of like day-to-day are they working on?
Well, they're actually based on the Polish side of the Ukrainian border, like within spitting distance of the border, almost. They provide medical help, food, clothing, gardening supplies. They deliver ambulances to the people there. And then they help the people coming out get transportation to other points, help them get medical attention, counseling, help them navigate, you know, the bureaucracy in Poland as they work their way through. So they do all kinds of work and they deliver truckloads of aid every day. And I see these people, and again, they could be people working at the casa or the sala as sound people, but they're now, you know, picking up boxes of bandages and medicine and, you know, making a dangerous trip into Ukraine and coming back.
They're working, yeah, they've got a higher mission right now, and hopefully the day will come again where they can work on art and cultural things. So the show streams for free. I'll just remind you that we are speaking with Norman Navratsky, the author, creator, performer of Run Navratsky Run, Escape from Banff Prison, streaming as of now, actually, until July the 4th. And the show is free to stream, so anyone can access it, but donations are encouraged. How much money would you suggest that people should donate?
What would people normally pay to go see a theater piece, you know? Like if before COVID, if I had the chance, I mean, later, if I have the chance to mount this show publicly, you know, it would be a $20, $30 ticket easily. But in this instance, it's up to people to decide what they want to give, you know, knowing it's going to a good cause and knowing that the need is there right now. So yeah, whatever people feel like, but any amount would be welcome by the people over there, because the dollar stretches way further, you know, in Poland and Ukraine, way further.
And the money again will go to the Folklowisko Foundation, which we will have links to, I think, when we go to stream your show online, and I'll tell you where to go see that in just a moment. So Norman, this play that you created was very personal because it draws on not just like history of Canada, but personal history from your own life. And I want you just to retell me this story of how you came to suspect that your own family might have been part of this imprisonment, the detainment, and poor treatment of Ukrainian Canadians, many of them new arrivals to the country, put up in camps, basically, all across Canada. Tell me about that postcard that arrived.
One day, this was in the 90s, I got a postcard in the mail saying, we have reason to believe that one of your relatives was imprisoned in a forced labor camp in Banff, Alberta. I'm like, oh, what's this all about? No idea. Nobody told me. The family had mentioned some things briefly, but nobody actually talked about it in detail. I put the postcard away in a book on the bookshelf. And then I did another play in Vancouver. I was in Vancouver on tour, and somebody came up to me after the play and said, I got an idea for your next play. Well, what's that? I saw your family name on a list of internees in this forced labor camp from World War I. I'm like, you're kidding. Okay. So I put two and two together, did the research. And sure enough, not one, not two, but three possibly distant family members, like great-great uncles, had been imprisoned in Banff and in Jasper, in these labor camps that were set up by the federal government to round up Ukrainian Canadians, because they considered them enemy aliens at the time, even though they were not, nothing of the kind. They just had the wrong paperwork. They came from Ukraine, and Ukraine in the late 19th, early 20th century, was occupied, not by Russia, but the Austro-Hungarian Empire. And so their passports were all marked Austro-Hungarian. And in World War I, Great Britain was at war with Germany and the Austro-Hungarian Empire and all their allies. So Canada was at war with Germany, the Austro-Hungarian Empire and all their allies. So these poor Ukrainians with the wrong passports and the federal government people wouldn't believe them. We're Ukrainian, even though the passport says Austro-Hungarian. We're Ukrainian. They occupied our country. And then they were rounded up and thrown in this prison. 24 prisons, to be exact, all across Canada.
And conditions are quite poor, too. It wasn't a summer camp getaway or anything like that.
No, not at all. Not at all. They were forced to work like 12-hour days, didn't have enough food, were beaten, were tortured. Some of them were killed. They were abused psychologically, physically. They froze in the winter. They got sick. They contracted pneumonia. Some of them ended up in insane asylums. Like, crazy stories. But thankfully, one of my relatives managed to escape. And he was one of dozens who made escape attempts and actually carried them out. So that's the positive story within my play, that he got out. And how did he get out? We got to watch the play to figure that one out.
That is the voice of Norman Navratsky, the writer and performer of Run, Navratsky, Run, Escape from Banff Prison, streaming now for free. Donations encouraged, going to a great organization helping with refugees from Ukraine heading to the east, the western border with Poland. Folkowisko Foundation is accepting the donations. Your character, Nestor, is the person who escapes from the camp. Tell me a little about him. Not mention how he escapes, but what are some of the things he's struggling with? I mean, aside from the fact that he's been ripped out of his normal life, there's a lot going on there in terms of his own family history.
Yeah, first of all, he's uncomprehending, like, why have I been in prison? What did I do? I did nothing wrong. They have no right to do this to me. So he is deeply offended, deeply outraged, and has to somehow channel that outrage and that anger. And he is in touch with his grandmother, who still lives in Ukraine, but it's sort of a spiritual connection, supernatural connection, because she has special powers, we'll say. She's known as a healer back in the old country. She heals people who are sick. So my main character has this special connection with his grandmother, who also gives him a secret amulet to protect him all this time. And while he's in prison, he's conspiring with other prisoners, trying to figure out, how the hell do we get out of here? Because we got to get out. He's somebody that doesn't accept a situation that's intolerable. He doesn't accept the abuse. He doesn't accept the beatings, the torture. It just enrages him and makes him want to do something about it. However, he's got to contend with the fear factor, because anybody who tries to escape, the orders for the guards are shoot to kill. So does he risk getting shot? What does he do? So the play psychologically examines everything he has to go through in order to find that inner strength to finally bust out.
It must be so strange to be looking at this dark history of Canadian history, the imprisonment, as we've been talking about, the terrible working conditions. And now at the same time, we are welcoming Ukrainian refugees. They're coming by the plane load, either a jet chartered by the federal government, or they're coming on commercial flights and setting up shop all across the country as a place of refuge. And some may eventually return, and some are like, I'm coming to Canada for good. So how does that feel to you as an artist right now, seeing that?
Well, there's a bitter irony here, because 120 years ago, the Canadian government invited Ukrainians also come to Canada because they were being persecuted by the Austro-Hungarian Empire. They had been invaded and occupied by this foreign power, much like Russia is doing today. And Canada saw that and said, they're not happy over there. Come on over here, have a new life. But all they were looking for at that time, Canada was looking for cheap labor, cheap, dumb labor that would do the dirty, hard, dangerous work and not complain about it and just be happy because they're living in Canada. And then, of course, they pulled the welcome mat from under their feet and then ended up jailing 9,000 of them. So that there's a bitter irony here that today the Canadian government is again opening the doors to tens of thousands of Ukrainian refugees, which is fabulous. But what awaits them here? People are talking about, we need more labor in the fields to pick the strawberries and the raspberries because there's not enough farm workers out there, the usual exploited migrant farm workers. We don't have enough of them because of COVID. Well, let's use the Ukrainians, put them to work in the fields, put them to work in the hotel industry, in the restaurant, in the food industry, the hospitality industry, because we need more workers. So I really fear, that what might happen to these people in the long run. And I'm talking to other Ukrainian Canadians, like coast to coast. What can we do to sort of make sure that doesn't happen? What can we do to maintain public awareness of this and to maintain public support, for them and make sure that, they're treated well? And what can we do in the long run to help the people who've come here and integrate them into the communities? Because a lot of them are musicians and artists and actors and writers, creative people as well, like really skilled, well-trained. And what can we work with them? What can we do with them? How can we help them adjust? These are big questions.
Big questions and a great historical perspective as well about how these questions of integration and welcoming, you know, are still ever present as they were 120 years ago, they are today. Sure. And unfortunately still clouded by the specter of war. It's the conflict that's spurring all of these new arrivals and these new questions. Norman, it's been such a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you again for taking the time. Congratulations on remounting the show.
Thank you so very much, Sarah.
That was Norman Navratsky, the creator and performer of Run Navratsky Run, Escape from Banff Prison. You're hearing some of his original music here, The Shovel Song. The show is now available to stream for free online on his YouTube channel. Look up his name, Norman Navratsky, NORMAN NAWROCKI. Donations are being accepted to help the Folklovisko Foundation, a group helping Ukrainian refugees who have crossed the border into Poland. You can find more information at the link on his YouTube page. The show is available online until Monday, July the 4th. You have been listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca. Tonight you heard director Audrey-Anne Bouchard on the English language premiere of Camille, the story, on until July 3rd at the Siegel Center. Jody Lachman and her son, Bram Lachman-Minkoff, both star in The Sages of Chelm, presented by the Dora Wasserman Yiddish Theater until Sunday, also at the Siegel Center. And Norman Navratsky bringing back his free streaming show about the detention of Ukrainian Canadians. And of course, there is a good cause associated with that. You can check out his YouTube page. Thank you so much to my guests this evening. You can hear past episodes of Upstage at CKUT.ca under the archives. Thank you to Jack Soler, our spoken word coordinator, for making sure this show gets to air. And thank you for tuning in. I'm your host, Sarah DeA. Speak with you next time on Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and CKUT.ca. Have fun. Stay safe. Happy Saint-Jean-Baptiste. Up next is Grey Matters.
Cinema Politica is thrilled to announce the theatrical release of Dear Jackie, a feature documentary by Henri Pardot. The film opens on June 17 in 4 theaters in Montreal: Cinéma Public, Cinéma du Musée, Cinémathèque Québécoise, and Cinéma Moderne, with the director and special guest in attendance at select screenings. Dear Jackie poetically tells the story of one of the oldest black communities in Canada, Montreal's Little Burgundy, by way of a cinematic letter to Jackie Robinson, the first black man to break the color barrier in professional baseball. It also masterfully connects history to the present by challenging the myth of a post-racial society. This release is co-presented by Desta Black Youth Network, Tyndale St. George's Community Center, Canteen Bergs, and Makisia Solo. For more information and tickets, visit cinemapolitica.org. We hope to see you there. This is a CKUT co-presentation. Politica is thrilled to announce the theatrical release of Dear Jackie, a feature documentary by Henri Pardot. The film opens on June 17 in 4 theaters in Montreal: Cinéma Public, Cinéma du Musée, Cinémathèque Québécoise, and Cinéma Moderne, with the director and special guest in attendance at select screenings. Dear Jackie poetically tells the story of one of the oldest black communities in Canada, Montreal's Little Burgundy, by way of a cinematic letter to Jackie Robinson, the first black man to break the color barrier in professional baseball. It also masterfully connects history to the present by challenging the myth of a post-racial society. This release is co-presented by Desta Black Youth Network, Tyndale St. George's Community Center, Canteen Bergs, and Makisia Solo. For more information and tickets, visit cinemapolitica.org. We hope to see you there. This is a CKUT co-presentation.
Good evening and welcome to the June 23rd edition of Gray Matters. Tonight on the show we have a lecture by Noam Chomsky entitled Chronicles of Dissent. It was recorded in Oro Valley, Arizona on May 12th of this year. So without further ado, here's tonight's lecture by Noam Chomsky, Chronicles of Dissent.
Extinction Rebellion, Sunrise Movement, lots of popular activism, mostly among the young.